ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast time for your Monday. We have crowned our Sheffield Shield champions. The IPL is underway. The Aussie women are playing a series and winning, for what it's worth, against the West Indies over in the Caribbean. Oh, there's fixtures coming out all over the place. We've got a whole lot to chop up on this week's episode. Plus, plenty of blowback from last week to pull it all apart. But Ed Cowan, firstly, great to see you again. How are you, firstly? Where are you in the world?
Corb, I'm well. I'm having a little bit of annual leave in Canada.
Oh,
family's over here. It's
lovely.
Was working hard last week. It's nice to put the feet up momentarily.
Get any feedback from last week's pod?
Ooh, I mean, start with the nice things. There's lots of listeners in New York City.
That's good.
Which is great. So, you know, hey, how about beers with the boys? A couple of LinkedIn still the preference as to where people are sliding in. Jackson Coop was on contract at the Bush Rangers.
Okay.
Many moons ago. He's now living in New York.
Wow.
He reached out. Big fan of the pod. So we are global, Corb.
Yeah.
So that was the positive news.
I can understand why you don't want to tell people where you are in the world now, because it's the minute you do, you've got contacts everywhere, all over the globe. All of a sudden, you social commitments. And go on. So, yeah. Telling me there were some not so positive responses.
I mean, there was some not so positive, and then there was some curious responses and different topics. So,
okay. A
former New South Wales player reached out. He took exception to a few things that I said around the New South Wales discussion that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a valid point in there. So, and I did say that it was fair, and I'd probably point it out. And he was upset that I had said that the one-day premiership, the New South Wales cricket, was the third ranked of the three titles, and he felt I was diminishing it and implied that I was diminishing the players' performance in that.
Right.
You know, and upon reflection, I think that's fair. When you're a player, you can only play in the games that you're picked in and you desire to win, and you push hard and you train all season, and a premiership's a premiership. So the intent was not to diminish at all, and maybe it came out a bit flippantly.
Yeah.
I mean, I stand by the words. I do, if I was to stack rank the three premierships, the Sheffield Shield is one, the Big Bash is two, and the One Day Cup, which is now not even a full season. It's seven games and kind of tacked on here and tacked on there, and has been for some time. This is nothing new, is, in my mind, the least important domestic trophy. It is still a trophy nonetheless. Teams still try and win it. The players still care about it. And that New South Wales team, for many of those young players, it was their first domestic trophy that they got to lift.
Yeah.
So as a board member, I'm incredibly proud of them.
Yeah. I think
young team, under pressure, did well. So yeah. That was not the intent, but
I think you might
he felt that I'd diminish the players in that, and so I wouldn't mind addressing that as I just did.
Yep. And I can completely understand that from a player's point of view. I think you just said the quiet bit out loud, but I think everyone agrees with you. And I think if anything, there's a debate about one versus two. There's not much debate between the gap between two and three. But I can understand, you know, from a player's perspective, how you'd look at that differently. And we all obviously hold the Sheffield Shield as the most important and everything else. But you know, you would argue the one that pulls, you know, people through the gate, and you know, how you're going to fill the stands and what it means for an organisation more broadly. That, you know, that maybe the Big Bash has started to replace that in some sections, depending on how you chop it up. We are here to talk about, we'll get to the mailbag too. I know the ABC Cricket Podcast at abc.net.au, it is flying. We're getting heaps of emails. I'll try and give you
that right?
I've actually got like a long list. We'll try and squeeze and get to a few at the back end. But I promise you, in the weeks to come, when things die down, we'll have more of a chance to get into that. The Sheffield Shield final. First of all, hey, just want to say, congratulations. They've been the dominant team all year. I'm just pulling up the final scorecard now, but don't worry, I saw it. Stumps day three, basically 5 for 31, South Australia. So final over Victoria, dominant year. I take it they went on to win the Sheffield Shield. So well done to the Vic boys for their efforts at a junction. That's absolutely over going into day four. So I take it the boys have had a good couple of days on the cans.
I mean, that's what happens when you call football a weekend. You can just switch off. You can just clock on to the CA app, check a score occasionally. Well, have I got some news for you, Corbin? You missed an absolute humdinger
Amazing.
Of a Shield final, because guess what? Alex Carey, that modern-day Australian great test player, bleeds red for the Sackers. He got 100. And then they knocked him over. No worries. They even brought in a fresh bowler of the Vicks in the second innings. That didn't even help him. Sackers, wow, what a performance. 60-odd behind on the first innings. Again, you're right. So 60-odd behind, then five down cheaply. And of all people, Nathan McAndrew and that phenomenal Alex Carey eked them ahead, and then exploded. And then Victoria fell in a heap. The old double night watchman last night didn't do them any favours. And the Victorian batters have kind of faded towards the back end of the year. And we talked about it last week. Two great Shield attacks going at it. And I felt as though that the Sackers probably had the batting advantage. And that's what showed in the end. So it was a classic. Props to Victoria for producing the wicket they did. I think the weather played a part. The ball swung and seamed, and batting wasn't easy the first couple of days, but some great bowling, and they caught well, and wow, back to back.
Yeah.
Incredible.
First time in South Australia's 133-year history that they did that, so the Vicks all out for 139. They lost 7 for 37 either side of stumps on day four. It was what a sensational final, and a sensational team in what South Australia have been able to do. As we said last week on the pod, they've only lost the only two games they lost were the first two games of the season, so you have to go way back to October. So incredible belief. Nathan McAndrew, who was named player of the match, takes 6 for in the match, but also that critical 60 that he made in the match turning stand with Alex Carey. It was a great edition of the Sheffield Shield final. Like, it was a proper final, and there's so many people responsible for that. South Australia, yes. Alex Carey, who you've touched on, McAndrew, who we've shouted out and mentioned. I want to get into the ground staff at Junction Oval, because you can produce any numbers you like about, it's the first time in a decade the lower-ranked teams won, and how rare it is for the team that comes second to upset the apple cart and win the Shield final. Well, the reason for that, a lot of the time is the fact that they're played on absolute feather beds. The home team completely bats the other side out of the game. They're dull finals. It's not, it's often not a game of cricket befitting of, what we look at as the centrepiece of the Australian domestic calendar and, we cherish. So I actually think, the Vicks and the Junction Oval staff in particular deserve a lot of credit for the fact that we got a great final. And ultimately what happened is, a special player played a special innings to decide the outcome. And that was really the difference in the match, what Alex Carey was able to do. So, hey, hats off to everybody involved for doing an absolute service to Australian domestic cricket over a gripping 5 days.
Yeah, well said. You got to, go back 20 years, same venue, Junction Oval. Martin Love got how many? 550 himself, I reckon, and 800 played 700, and it was a waste of time. So to have a final of this quality, you're right. Huge props to the curation staff for putting it forward, and Victoria for backing themselves to win a game on that wicket, a wicket that they've played on all summer. It's the right 100% the right thing to do. And you're right, it took a moment of greatness. This is a game no other 100 scored.
No.
Alex Carey showed not just his class, but the gulf between what it takes to be an amazing test cricketer, and he is, and a good domestic cricketer. And he stepped up. That's his second Shield final 100 in a row. So he knows how to deal with pressure. He deals with it all the time in test cricket. But if you ask him, I reckon he'd probably say these last two Shield finals have been as special as any test win, because to play amongst your friends, to play for your state, to play in a final in the build-up of 10 games prior, and there's been a pre-season. Test series come and go. Particularly these days, there's no build-up. You turn up, there's three tests, sometimes two, and you go home. The Ashes and the Border Gavaskar are slightly different, in terms of the pressure and what it means. But he delivered, and it was a hell of an innings because Victoria have a phenomenal attack. We discussed this last week, and the ball was nipping around, and he just went out and played beautifully. Some of the shots he played. Do yourself a favor, listeners, and get on the highlights, because the cover driving, the straight driving, it was as classical left-handed batting as you could ever watch. I thought it was delicious.
And to be honest, I know people inside the Victorian camp will be thinking, oh, yeah, maybe we would have been better off doing that, or yeah, are we better off having the shield? And even if it's a dull draw, who cares? I would much rather this, where the side that's been spectacular all year ultimately loses because someone plays another worldly type innings, and you get a great result and it's a tremendous game of cricket and you just get beaten by a better team on the day, than essentially win in inverted commas because you play some dull draw over 5 days. I think it's certainly, I know which one's better for cricket and better for the Sheffield Shield, because if we're going to do that dull, boring draw thing, we may as well just give the Sheffield Shield to the team that finishes on top of the ladder at the end of the regular season. Just a couple of audio pieces I actually had yesterday off, Teddy. So I watched a fair bit of cricket and watched a lot of that Alex Carey 100 and was able to take a lot of it in, including today. I was going for a little slow jog around the town and I was listening to the end of the Shield final in my little 3-hour window I get on a Monday. And Mitch Turner called the finish. So I just thought I'd bring that to you as called on ABC Sport.
Thornton is in, bowling to O'Neill, straight through him, it's all over! South Australia go back-to-back for the first time in their history to claim successive Sheffield Shield titles. You can write the history in red. They broke the drought last year, and when it rains, it pours.
I mean, great call. I just want to know, from a broadcaster's point of view, do you remember those big moments like that? You know, when you're a broadcaster coming up in the world and you get a chance to call the finale of a big fixture like that, do any moments pop into your head? That was awesome to hear the emotion.
No, definitely. I mean, they're the best moments, absolutely, and the joy that you get to experience and see guys I love watching people celebrate team success. Like it's the one thing I miss from even playing like sort of amateur level sport. Like it is, you don't miss the actual game or whatever, but you miss that feeling and being able to have that sort of euphoric sort of shared experience and everything else that goes along with it. So, I mean, I did two Sheffield Shield finals when I was sort of much younger, and they both ended in dull, boring draws, what I'm talking about. Yeah. So how cool is that to be able to have that kind of a moment after a ripping 5 days of cricket? And there were two weird ones too, where Victoria played in both, but at neutral venues. Like one was down in Hobart where they played WA. And the other one was against South Australia and Alice Springs, which was, again, it wasn't a spectacular game of cricket. So I'm sure Mitch will remember that much more fondly than probably I do those two games. As I was sort of trotting along, Ned Hall sort of runs downstairs and puts a microphone under the face of, or under the mouth of Ryan Harris, who... Yeah, we loved Ryan Harris as a player, you know, this absolute warrior of a fast bowler for Australia for many years. And to see what he's been able to do with this group in a short period of time, and you'll love this, Teddy. Here's the raw emotion of Ryan Harris not long after the finish.
Oh, probably won't be able to speak here for a minute, but just unreal. Emotional. give me 1 second here, but what these boys have achieved this year, nothing other than special, so... to be able to come over here, obviously play the best team of the season, to be able to beat them on their home patch, behind in the game the whole way. Alex Carey, that's why he's the best in the world. For him to come out and do that yesterday with Nathan McAndrew to give us a chance, we knew if we could get up to even 100 or 120, just something to bowl at. One thing this group is so good at doing, as we've seen again, is just fighting, and they've done it again. I just can't believe it.
How good's that?
Awesome. One of my favourite teammates I ever got to play with just gave his absolute all at every opportunity. And there's this one game that stands out in my mind in Barbados. No one was watching. It was about 2 a.m. in Australia. But he'd had a virus and he'd lost like 7 kilos in 24 hours. Didn't whinge, ran in, bowled like an absolute Mack truck. I think he was man of the match in the end. You know, like it was just... sensational, great team player, and he's been able to instill that level of cohesion and culture and enjoyment into a team that was they were a bunch of also-rans. They finished last, what, five years in a row. Like, this is turning into a fairy tale story.
Yeah. And you talk about...
Absolute fairy tale.
And you talk about cohesion, too. I mean, for the better part of my time following, you know, domestic cricket and Australian cricket, that South Australia's always been like the island of misfit toys. Like, it's a bunch of guys that have come from other states and they're trying to throw it together, and there's one or two native Croaters trying to, you know, play for their state. But to get them all to sort of buy in, and that can be a difficult task too, because it's...
Yeah.
And you've done it. I mean, imagine it's not the same. That there's some part of you that you're representing a team as opposed to representing your state, the state that you grew up with. And so if you haven't got that sort of organic thing, you need to be able to find a bigger cause or purpose or whatever it is to buy into. And yet... he's been able to do it in a short period of time. So, deserves so much credit. And he mentioned that, you know, Carey partnership with McAndrew. I mentioned it facetiously off the top, the score going into day four. Even when they came together, they were 7-for with a lead of only 59. And when that partnership unfolded, I mean, it's such an improbable victory and so good for Shield cricket. 2 years in a row that it ends on such an upswing.
And not just, I mean, if this was an ordinary Shield game, round two fixture at the Junction, these are the games that you remember as a player until the day you die. Remember that time where we were 50 ahead, 7 down, and Cairns, got 100, we knocked him out. Oh, yeah, that was amazing. Here's the Shield final that it happened. Like, the pressure is immense. And it actually felt like the Vicks buckled a little bit. They got knocked over in 49 overs in that second innings. They just had to bat. And Hanscom and Harris were, I mean, it wasn't easy conditions, but they were doing it pretty easily. And they both played kind of, I don't know, lazy shots, it felt, to get out when the game was in control of two seasoned pros. They should really have iced that game. Both of them get 70 and you get home 6 down and there might be a jitter or two, but they got beaten comprehensively in the end.
Yeah. Maybe they were on the right side of history too when it came to the whole substitute debate, which caused plenty of water cooler conversation, didn't it, when Mitch Perry, who was dropped for the final, ended up taking a wicket with his first ball, which was an awesome moment. I think everyone felt absolutely chuffed for him at that particular stage where McSweeney decided to let one go and just ducked back in towards him, and he was given out leg before without playing a shot. He replaced the man who was picked ahead of him, Sam Elliott, who hurt his hamstring and was ruled out during the innings break. There was all sorts of chaos going on as Victoria tried to put subfieldsmen out there. The assistant coach, Ben Rohrer, tried to do it. He was told, hey, the assistant coach is only allowed to field when it's an away game, so that won't be kosher here. Basically, we've got to get someone else out, and so on and so forth. And I think the reserve wicketkeeper was out there at one point, and even Xavier Crone, who was working on the telecast, got pulled out there to put some whites on. So it was absolute chaos. But the fact that Perry was able to be substituted in for a hamstring, and we knew this rule existed. We talked about it, you know, way back at the start of the season in, you know, late September, October, and here it is showing itself up in the final. South Australia had a reciprocal chance to make a sub, and interestingly, Ryan Harris in that interview mentioned McAndrew was the guy they went and spoke to, who was a bit banged up, and basically even thought about asking the question to him, and McAndrew cut him off and said, no, I'll be right to get through, and sure enough, he's man of the match in the final. But how does this sit with you, the Vicks are able to pull the change in a game of first-class cricket with so much at stake?
No, it is what it is. There's I know the playing conditions in place to protect players for the season, and, you know, you don't want compounded injuries, but it's in place. They've played with it all season. I think it's kind of play on by this stage. I just find it fascinating that McAndrew was the guy that, you know, he was stiff and sore, and they thought, oh, maybe we should swap him out. And he said, watch this, fellas. I'm going to dig in, and if I can't do it with the ball later, I'll do it with the bat. And I just love that. He's the kind of guy you want in your team.
It's a good one for the sort of hardcore cricket types, isn't it, that would hate the rule and feel like it's just not cricket and everything else. And then here we go. We have an example where that they had the chance to make the sub, and the one guy that they decided to leave in the game rather than putting out ultimately plays a huge role in deciding the outcome. Anything else from the Shield final before we move on? I mean, it feels like we can't say too many good things about it.
Nothing more comes to mind. I miss the Sheffield Shield already.
Yeah.
where do you spend your idle hours between meetings at work when you're like, oh, just check the shield score, or you know, go through all the wickets if you miss a game at night, or if you've got
put the multi screen up with the three games at the same time.
you beat me to it. You got all three screens up on a Sunday afternoon on the TV, and I'm just kind of picking away. You know, it's just there's something to it that just warms the heart.
Awesome.
What it means so much to the player. I mean, you watch that. You talk about you love watching players celebrate. It means so much to them because it is the endurance of a season. It is the ups and downs, the trials, the tribulations, and then it comes for one match and you've got to turn up and you've got to produce. And there's nothing quite like it.
I mentioned earlier about the ground staff at the Junction Oval. Is Victoria review the whole thing? Would there be people there saying we should have produced an absolute flatty and we would rather celebrate a dull draw than be sitting here on the wrong side of it?
I don't think so, because they had their chances to win the game. And of course, you know, what we haven't touched on is these finals. You know, back in the day, there was you either won outright or it was a draw or you lost. Where, you know, they've brought in the first innings crazy kind of point scheme that they use during the season to determine if it's on first innings only and the match is a draw, then they are declared the winner. So, yes, in this case, Victoria would have won on first innings. But if you roll out a pancake, you remember, and you lose the toss and there's a bit of moisture and you get 350 and the other team gets 450 or 500, then you're done. So I think you're better off. It does provide an incentive to actually back yourself to produce a result.
Well done to the Vics, to South Australia, to everyone for a fantastic Shield season. And I mean, even I think Western Australia finished last, and we'll talk about them in the mix to make the final with a couple of weeks to go. So 2 years in a row, we've had really good cricket the whole way through.
So who are the standouts from this Shield season that you say, if you're picking either an Aussie A tour or even a test tour, you know, someone that's really put their hand up to say, I might be ready for the next level. You know, every season there's usually one or two that, you know, purely out of the grit, determination and performance of Shield cricket, that name was off the radar, that throw themselves onto it. Any names come to mind for you?
Two guys we just spoke about. So one is, and Xavier Doherty mentioned this a few weeks ago, I wouldn't have had him anywhere near the conversation. And yet you get to a point where you think, how can he not be in the conversation? Is Nathan McAndrew, where you think, well, what more does he have to do to all of a sudden be in the mix? And we've seen guys come in, you know, that aren't express pace, that can bowl a steady line and, you know, keep pressure on alongside, you know, some elite fast bowlers that Australia currently have. And there's a role for that guy, I think, in the test team at different stages. So he's one. The other one, Teddy, and I got some pretty stern feedback from one of our loyal listeners, Tom, on Instagram, who said to me, now that he's out, I can send this. How can you let Ed get away with picking Will Sutherland over Liam Scott as the all-rounder? Sutherland bats at 8 and Scott was the best player in the Shield this year again. And it's, you know, fair play to him. Like, how many more years does Liam Scott have to dominate this competition before all of a sudden we look at this guy and go, this dude can really play?
Yeah, don't worry. I copped that feedback from a few people as well. I mean, the powers of social media. I mean, yeah, back-to-back great seasons, obviously Shield Player of the Year this year and produced under pressure. I don't know. Well, so I definitely think he is someone, you know, when you talk about all-rounders, because you look at his batting and it's okay, and you look at his bowling and it's okay. What I like about Will Sutherland, and I'm not defending, you know, my choice, because, it's probably a toss of a coin, and Liam Scott has produced again and proven me to be an idiot, which is fine. I think Will Sutherland's game is more attuned to international cricket. He's a fraction faster. I think he's a bit more durable. But he's like a fourth bowler who can bat at 8. And that's okay. You know, I don't think he's someone who can bat at 6 and bowl second change for the test team. But
good thing is
there's potential for him to be a bowling all-rounder. I think I'm still uncertain. Is Liam Scott a bowling all-rounder, a batting all-rounder, or just an all-rounder?
Two things. When the keeper bats at 6, it helps, which clearly it does, not just for his state team, but for the national team at the moment in Alex Carey. The other thing I like about the two guys I've put forward here is that this is how it should work, shouldn't it? Like, you should be part of a successful team, be among the better players for the best team, and then ultimately you get a window into playing for Australia, rather than, I think, what we've done a lot in the past, which is, you know, ignore the results of domestic cricket, try and look through them as sort of what you were saying there with Will Sullivan, and say, I think that guy might be it. And yet they're not necessarily the best player for their team, and their team's not even necessarily the best team in domestic cricket. This is a team that knows how to win, and that there's got to be part of that, doesn't it? That it's like, this is a winning team.
It's a perfect argument, and it's an argument I agree with, to the point that I would love to see Liam Scott just be the first picked for the Australia A team, and unfortunately he's the type of player that has to do the road less travelled, and so he's going to have to produce a couple of great A games. It's unlikely, given the role he plays, that, you know, he's going to put pressure on Cameron Green or, you know, pick your all-rounder, Bo Webster, for the moment.
Give me some.
So he's just going to have to hang around in the background and around the hoop. But you're right. You pick guys who know how to win. They know how to perform under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a guy who's backed himself. He grew up in New South Wales. He left as basically straight after the 19s carnival. His family moved over. He was like, I ain't waiting around here to see what goes on. I'm impatient. I'm going to go back myself to go play for South Australia. So he's hungry. He's talented. And he's a bloody good cricketer. So, you know, it was a toss of the coin, and maybe a bit flippant of me to...
No, give me some other names and answer your own question. So who are some names for you?
Well, Liam Scott was the name that actually came to mind. I think if you're the Shield Player of the Year, you get a crack at it.
Yep, certainly on, like you said, on a nature or whatever it turns out to be. It's a fun Shield season coming to a close. We sort of lamented the batting and the fact that a lot of the guys are averaging in the 30s and whatever it turns out to be. But, hey, it led to a pretty exciting race the whole way through. A couple of other things that caught my attention this week. So we'll get to a little bit of mailbag before we get out of here. Did you see Pat Cummins on the Business of Sport podcast?
I didn't, was this him saying that we could earn much more money playing in the 100 than having to come back and play Test cricket against Bangladesh, and so this is all coming to a head?
These are the quotes. So some of our guys are saying no to $500,000 for 20 days' work to go and play those two Test matches against Bangladesh. Cummins told the Business of Sport podcast. It's a tension point. It has been for a while, but I think it's only growing. Something we speak about is how do we make sure we've got our best Australian guys to choose from when we're picking a Test side or an ODI side, because there is so much demand for them elsewhere. So Cummins, sort of, I guess, something that Australian cricket has been aware of for a long period of time, but now you've got the glamour boy and the Test captain basically coming out and saying the quiet bit out loud.
He's a good negotiator, isn't he? And it goes to the conversation we had last week and a lot of the less formal feedback I got around the BBL privatisation was, you know, you underestimate the player landscape, how quickly it's changing. And these offers of, you know, 10-year multi-club contracts are real, and you just never know how people are going to react. And, yeah, I'm certain that is the case. But the Test players get paid well. There's no doubt about that. So it's not as though, and as well or better than every other country in the world. So it's not as though they're crying poor. Pat is in an enviable place in that he is in high demand to play Test cricket. He doesn't play any ODI cricket, and he hardly plays any T20 cricket for Australia. So he gets the best of all worlds. He gets to pick and choose his T20 cricket and play Test cricket. And I think what he underestimates is, you know, while Australia's a small market, people's global appeal commercially is largely confined to their home market in a sport like cricket. You know, like his Razer sponsorship, I'm sure, is, you know, pretty much confined to, I don't know this, but I'm just kind of alluding to, sometimes you overestimate your global appeal, and I'm not talking about contracts, and, you know, half of his brand or most of his brand is built in Australia. And so you also need to be careful from a commercial point of view, I think, as to how you play that. If he turned his back on Test cricket and went and played in the 100, I don't think he will, and I don't think any of the current Test players will. But it may change over the years, but you got to be wary there are pros and cons to do that.
Yeah, it sounded a bit to me too, like, hey, I don't really want to play in these games, but I don't want them to go on without me either. It's like, well, go and play in the 100 then. The test matches will go on. I can't imagine, how would he feel about that, that he's the captain of the test team and he's playing in the 100 and all of a sudden there's, you know, test matches being played without him on the other side of the world. I'm sure that wouldn't sit that well with him either, would it?
Well, it wouldn't, but everyone's evidently, he's suggesting, has a price. So maybe it's a tension point. If that was $1 million for 20 days' work, would he take the money? Mm. Don't know.
It's interesting.
I mean, there's no doubt, and we've talked about this endlessly over the last 6 weeks, so I don't need to necessarily repeat myself. We underpay our best players in Australia, and we overpay our worst players. And so the barbell of player payments is totally out of whack at the moment. And so we need to find a way to address it. Otherwise, this issue is going to keep coming to a head. And the problem being, you know, the ACA has done an amazing job, but it's a member-based union. And so their incentive is far more broad-based than actually what's in the best interest of probably Australian cricket and understanding how we can keep our best players here for longer.
Yeah. How do you reckon that's going to go in the cost of living crisis, that you're going to go and tell the middle class of Australian cricket, hey, by the way, you're now having a big haircut and we're going to give more money to Pat Cummins and the guys at the top?
Sure, but you got to be also realistic to understand who's paying their bills what comes with it. There can be a world of greater flexibility, so you're allowed to
But the ACA is their union as well, so they're representing the middle class as much as they're representing the guys at the top.
No, I understand that. That's how, I mean, aren't you guys on strike? I'm glad that you've actually turned up today, Corb. But so I get how unions work. But I guess my broader point is, you know, you can trade off money for flexibility. You can trade off money for a whole range of things. There are lots of cricketers who don't play a lot of cricket and earn a half decent wage. And so how does that sit well with the average Joe in the pub? You get to be a professional cricketer, play 10 days of cricket a year, and you earn 10 times the average wage. Well, that doesn't sit well as well. So I don't know what's right. I don't know what's wrong. I'm just saying currently there is an imbalance that needs to be addressed. Otherwise, these kinds of tensions are only going to get more attention.
Mm. So who's he speaking to there? He's basically saying to Cricket Australia, hey, don't put these games
100%.
On. Yeah.
that is nothing surer. That is exactly what the intent of that podcast was.
Yep. Well, we'll be there, of course, for those matches, which is a long time away. That doesn't come around till August when Australia play those test matches in the NT and in North Queensland in Mackay. The 100, by the way, Tim David, Mitch Marsh and Adam Zampa will all be there. Obviously, they won't be required to play in those test matches. Are we any closer to a privatisation decision? We're now being told April as the month. You spoke to people at Cricket Australia during the week, evidently. Are you any closer to working out whether it will happen, won't happen? I heard Bharat Sundaresan say on Offsiders on the weekend that privatisation has to happen. So he was certainly very pro it. In what was a pretty brief conversation as the program was moving on, but any more clarity on that?
Not really.
Okay.
No.
We'll come back to it. The IPL is up and going, the cricket tournament every year on the calendar where the world's best assemble. And here's a little tone setter for you, two games in. So Virat Kohli hit an unbeaten 69 to help the defending champs RCB. Winners first up against the Sunrisers Hyderabad. Delayed start for Pat Cummins, who's the captain of the team at Sunrisers Hyderabad. Travis Head did play in the game. He was out, though, for 10, I think he got. He missed out in the first game. He got 11, sorry. He was dismissed there. And RCB also features Tim David. So he played in that side and was 16 not out with Virat at the finish. But how about this for a game? So RCB chased 202 inside 16 overs. It's the fastest 200-plus run chase in IPL history. And then it was backed up last night by the game between the Mumbai Indians and the Kolkata Knight Riders. KKR made 220 and the Mumbai Indians mopped them up in the 20th over. So they finished at 4 for 224. So chasing's in, as we know, in world cricket, and big scores are being reeled in early in the young season in the IPL.
Yeah,
I mean, I'll pay some attention at some point, but the last two nights haven't been it. So
you've been shielding my lights rather
good,
than...
good summary from you. It's in a terrible time zone for me at the moment. So I'll get into it. I'll ease into it. Don't worry.
16 Aussies are over there. So Cam Green on $4.17 million, of course, playing for KKR. Sunrisers Hyderabad have Head Cummins and Jack Edwards. RCB, the defending champs, Hazelwood and David. Hazelwood, a delayed start, but he's over there. Stark, likewise, injured. I know there was some sort of eyebrows raised there, but he is going to be there in the not-too-distant future playing for the Delhi Capitals. The Punjab Kings, who are coached by Ricky Ponting now, they've got Stoinis, Dorshus, Connolly, Owens and Bartlett. So they're well represented with five Aussies. The Lucknow Super Giants, coached by Justin Langer, have the two West Aussie boys, Mitch Marsh and Josh Inglis. And the Chennai Super Kings, represented by Matt Short and now Spencer Johnson, who was on more money to play in the PSL, turned his back on that to go and take a smaller contract in the IPL. So he's playing in the better competition, but he's earning less bucks to basically go and fulfill a spot as an injury replacement for Nathan Ellis. So Spencer Johnson, who, let's be honest, hasn't played a whole lot of cricket since last April. So good luck to him, the 16 Aussies that are going to be there in the IPL.
I thought you were going to flag, since the last time we talked, that two IPL teams of the ownership has changed hands for big money.
So the Rajasthan Royals have gone to a US-based consortium who bought them for $1.63 billion. That's 2.59 Aussie billion. There's another interesting subplot to all of that. While RCB had been purchased by a mixed Indian/US-based consortium, they bought the team for $1.78 billion. Again, that translates to 2.82 billion Aussie. So more expensive, as you could imagine, for the glamour team, RCB, as opposed to the Rajasthan Royals. What do you make of those numbers, Teddy?
Wow. I mean, from an investor point of view, they're obviously big numbers at a headline valuation. But these are good assets with a massive runway ahead of them, and you can see why people are paying up for them. But it's almost ironic that now a lot of these, the last couple of sales, not just these two, but the expansion teams, other investors have come from the US. Know nothing about cricket, but they know when sports leagues don't have promotion relegation, can cap player payments, it takes all the best of the US leagues that they know and have invested in, but has a fixed cost base and a low cost base, they see the dollar sign, so they're happy to pay up for them.
Yeah. 15 Aussies are also in the PSL, for whatever that's worth, as well, and Steve Smith and Josh Phillippe playing for the same team, which also features Ashton Turner as the captain and Peter Siddle. So well done to the Moulton Sultans, who won their first up game in the PSL. So there's going to be, what's that, 30 Aussies or whatever it is playing in these two competitions that are being run concurrently. I mentioned the other sort of plot that went along with the sale of the Rajasthan Royals team. Remember Shane Warne played the first 4 years for the Rajasthan Royals, and they offered him 0.75% of the franchise per year he played. So he ended up playing four seasons. So you do the math. That's 3% of the team. Now, it's unclear, but I know the family has been asked in recent days whether they still own the share or not. But basically, the share of the sale in Australian dollars would have amounted to $75 million had they still owned it or whatever happened to it. But $75 million for Warney's sort of 4 years that obviously he had with Rajasthan.
I mean, that's the way you incentivize the headline acts. That's how Messi has done it in the States with his football team. If you want the big boys, you got to incentivize them to create enterprise value, not just come and take a salary. And we should think about that model more broadly for the Big Bash in the future at the right time. But whether or not they had sold shares, shares in Rajasthan have changed hands endlessly for the last 10 years. So who knows, up to $75 million. But you know what? That could look, I mean, well done. You back yourself to create value, and it's taken a long time for that to happen. And I love stories like that.
There's lots of other things we could touch on. Just off the Cricket Australia website during the week, there was a paragraph which jumped out to me, which I've been chasing this that hard to try and get a concrete answer, and no wonder I can't. Paragraph reads, there is uncertainty surrounding the 2028 Olympics cutoff, and Australia currently sits behind New Zealand in the rankings, adding importance to these encounters in the shortest form, given the likelihood only one country from each region will feature. So there is no concrete answer, basically, at the moment as to what the cutoff is, when it's going to be, how it's going to be determined. So we all expect it's going to be a region, and yet... maybe they'll just wait for the right time and then decide, you know what, now's the cutoff point, now that the rankings look like they we want them to look.
So. Guess what? We want Australia involved. And so, oh, they won a game. Oh, the cutoff has happened.
So just stand by on that. The Indian dates are out. So less than 2 weeks between the end of the SCG test and the start of the Nagpur test on January 21. So Nagpur will be the first test for the second straight tour. That the venues here, I must admit, I was about to say caught people by surprise, but maybe that's not the right term because it's been trending this way for a long period of time. But that there's no sort of glamour venues really on here apart from the second test. So first test, Nagpur, second test, Chennai, third test, Guwahati, which is the latest test venue in India. Ranchi's back on the card for February 19, and then Ahmedabad to finish on the 27th. So again, Ahmedabad, the last test, which is at the Modi Stadium. So they basically got, out of the five tests, two of them featured last time around, and they're back again, plus sort of three that are sort of a little off the beaten track.
So odd. So like three proper outpost test venues for the biggest series that they play.
Yeah,
blows me away. But it's a big country. There's 1.6 billion people or whatever there is. So, you know, I don't know. It's it is what it is.
It's going to be a crowded schedule. I mean, 8 days between the end of the final test in Ahmedabad and the start of that sort of special 150th anniversary test at the MCG. So, short turnaround at the end of the Sydney test. Short turnaround again as we head towards the test after that, of course. At the G. I was trying to find this tweet from Dan Cherney. I don't know if you saw it during the week talking about the venues. He did a great job at actually making the comparison as to what it would look like. This would be like Australia hosting its five marquee tests in Hobart, Brisbane, Kalgoorlie, Wollongong and Canberra.
I mean, it's a bit tongue-in-cheek.
Not far off, though.
I don't think Kalgoorlie is quite on the map. Ahmedabad, but hey, the point was taken.
Well, on to the Aussie women. So 3-0 over the West Indies in the T20 series, including a maiden ton for Georgia Vola, 52 balls. They won game one of the ODIs by 103 runs, and they won again today comfortably. So Beth Mooney with 65. She missed the first ODI, which handed a debut cap to Talia Wilson, who was presented by Shelley Nitschke. So well done to her, becomes the latest wicketkeeper for Australia. And you know what's caught my eye over there more than anything, Teddy? I've been running this narrative hard, and I promise it's nothing anti against Sophie Molyneux. I'm a big Sophie Molyneux fan, but she's got an injured back, and she's playing as a specialist batter. So she's basically there as the specialist captain. Like, I'm a big Sophie Molyneux fan, but she is not a specialist batter in the Australian team, and yet she's basically there because she's captaining the side, and she's not fit to bowl.
When's this coming to a head? Are you calling it? Do you have a line?
I have no idea. But they knew this. Like, this isn't like a surprise. Like, oh my God, she got injured. Like,
you've been hot on it for a while. From day one, you called this. So if it unravels, we'll give you your flowers.
She has.
Yeah, we talked about Liam Scott doing it the hard way. Talia Wilson has dominated domestic cricket for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, really. So awesome to see her finally get a game for Australia. That made me happy.
Do you want some mailbag to get before we go?
Yeah, one or two. Let's pick off one or two.
Yep. ABC Cricket Podcast at abc.net.au. Corbin and Ed, considering the statue debate around Travis Head, I would argue that given Alex Carey has scored back-to-back hundreds in back-to-back winning Sheffield Shield finals, that Carey is now in front of Head to build a statue. What are your thoughts from Tim?
I mean, I'm comfortable with dual statues.
Oh.
Both. I mean, Alex Carey is fast becoming a modern-day great. I said that at the start of the podcast. And Travis Head is probably already there and part of the cultural fabric of Australian cricket, you know, given his performances in recent years. So I could see a statue at the Adelaide Oval of both of them, hand in hand, you know. So just both playing together somewhere. They don't need to be individualised. These are two homegrown legends of the game that happen to both be from South Australia. So why not?
Shills from Hillary's, basically sort of abbreviated version of his email, but basically says, loving the call of the ABC final. Can't wait for Ed's breakdown. I hope you've enjoyed it. And wants to know if we're going to cover more Sheffield Shield going forward on the ABC. That'd be nice. I know in England, I know the BBC cover still all the county teams. And so I'll put it forward. Hopefully we can.
Well, I mean, of course, you've got the CA coverage, which is excellent. So you could put that through the listen app, surely.
Might be able to merge them together, get some ABC personalities on there, and away they go.
For sure.
And then complete dichotomy to that was another message that we got from Patty, who basically wasn't all that impressed with some of the analysis on the Sheffield Shield coverage. But he does note down the end of his email, which he deserves a shout-out for, the Sackers are 7-for-160 as I write this, and I can only hope on Monday's show it'll be focused on their miraculous turnaround led by a charging Alex Carey ton. That's really good, isn't it?
Oh, man. There we have it. We could all see the waters. See it in the waters. It's great.
All right, David says, asking about T20 coaches, it's good money, but is it good value for coaches and their careers?
Absolutely. Maximum money, maximum flexibility, low accountability. Heaven for a coach.
Okay.
I mean, if you can make your name in the Big Bash or one of the other, you know, second tier, you know, everything's second tier compared to the IPL, so that's not being disparaging, and win consistently and develop a brand for yourself, then, you know, there's a huge opportunity to become a IPL coach, and that's, you know, write your own check.
Nat from Melbourne, reporting back from watching the Channel 10 News in Melbourne in Sheffield Shield final week. Order of stories, AFL old injuries update, AFL new injuries update, Sheffield Shield final, interviews with Carey and Murphy, chat about selection questions. It's all right, got covered. It was in the bulletin.
Okay, word.
Martin.
Yeah, I mean, you're just reading them live as they come in here, or what?
No, I've got a long list. Declan Byrne, who's holds this together for us, he's given me a little list of what we've got. Martin says, are you interested in the IPL? Do you have a team out of the 10? How many teams will there be in 10 years?
Do I have a team? I don't have a team officially. I mean, I quite like wherever Travis Head plays. I just follow him around a bit.
Sunrises?
Do I barrack for them? No. Do I have any merch? No. How many teams will there be? I think there'll be, I mean, you got to remember every team dilutes the value a little bit of every other team currently. So, and it's, you know, basically owner operated in conjunction with the BCCI. So you can see a world where there are 12, maybe 14 in 10 years time, but it's not going to NFL 40.
The players change teams all the time, so I think as a supporter, it's only fair that I change my IPL team regularly as well. So I was originally the Kolkata Knight Riders, then I was RCB, and then because I've visited Delhi, I think now I'm Delhi Capitals. But I'll just keep rotating, and we'll see if we can tick them all off. Scott from the Gold Coast, really long email, but the gist of it was that Sophie Molyneux in the West Indies series, hardly batting or bowling. Scott isn't happy with the CR hierarchy, picking on leadership skills and not cricket skills. Should have read this 2 minutes ago when I touched on Sophie Molyneux. Scott doesn't miss that either. But I will let that stand as comment. Appreciate it, Scott. Oscar in Sydney wants you to name your top 10 ODI cricketers of all time. Notes Ed thinks the format is dead/dying, so this 10 won't change.
Yeah.
It's a bit of an obit to the format. I'm going to give you that one for next week, all right?
Hang on. So all countries?
Give us...
Or Australian?
No, Australian. Maybe both.
Australian.
Give me an Australian version.
Australian ODI players.
You'll be on some long flight in the next week. I'm going to give you that one to go away with. There's also a shout out from a certain Virginia who emailed through listening to the pod on the treadmill. Love it. So shout out to Ginny. And she'll be missing you, I'm sure, Teddy. So I need to let you go and spend some quality family time. I'll chat to you soon here on the ABC Cricket Podcast. Your emails, by the way, abccricketpodcast@abc.net.au. Have a good week, Teddy.
Later, Corb.